we're talking about magic. Magic in the world and what that means. I mean, we can define magic in a lot of ways. And Dean Foster, you're just staring ahead straight into space.
Do you believe in magic?
Oh, no. Ding. Yes, what? Yeah, if we say another bar of that, and we're going to have to pay, huh? Okay.
Licensing.
Yeah, there's licensing is really upset about this.
Ding.
You even had the lyrics that time. And they may have been right, which is scary. So,
It's magic, man. It's magic.
It's the magic man.
It's magic. So is this a cultural issue? Is there a cultural piece
to it? I don't know. Is there a cultural piece to it?
And why should we be thinking about it? Because we are,
oops,
your culture showing. And I'm Dean Foster, and you're
Tom Peterson.
And this is
Did you forget my name?
Yeah, thank you. That's why I asked.
This is always a magical moment, you know, when we get together to do these podcasts also.
And magical in what way?
I don't know. Wow.
No, I mean, like, why do you say it's magical? Because it's...
Well, because
are we doing something... This takes us to the definition of magic and magical.
It does.
Are we doing something that is, what, irrational?
Wow, we killed the fun already. I can't believe it. That's maybe a record.
What?
It's maybe the fastest that you've killed the fun in the discussion.
Just suck the fun right out of it. Just take it right out of
there.
There,
it's gone. It's gone. Anybody tuning in for fun, forget it. We're done.
Fun? No.
No fun.
Enter D.
Take your fun and leave.
But different cultures have different views on magic.
Do they?
And what one culture might say is magical, another culture might have a very rational scientific explanation for it.
Yeah, name one.
Well, Western cultures
it's my job. That's what I do here.
Often default to a scientific explanation. If you can't define it or explain it scientifically, then therefore... Sometimes some other people would say it is magical or superstitious or spiritual or whatever, but there's no rational reason for it. Magic is one of those pieces to that non-scientific side of understanding things.
Okay.
Is it purely entertainment? I mean, I think magic, you know, magic shows, magicians, card tricks, charlatans, all of that
right.
has a certain tradition. But magic is also very serious business and a very serious part of a lot of cultures.
Now, in this case, right now, we're not talking Harry Potter magic. We're talking, at least I don't think we are. Maybe we are. But we're talking the actual belief of things being done and being created or fixed or adjusted or anything along those lines that are done through a way that isn't understandable to the average person.
Understandable rationally.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Scientifically or with a scientific
right.
basis.
Well, they may be scientifically and there may be a rational explanation to it, but it certainly can't be part of the scenario.
You know, from
if it's going to be magic.
From an anthropological perspective, to just share this, magical thinking is all about thinking in a way where you're putting cause and effect together unscientifically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you see the combination of certain ingredients in a cauldron, and if you believe that this is going to turn average metal into gold, you throw the metal in there with all these ingredients and you say some magic spells, and if you believe hard enough, I guess it does turn to gold, right? If you take out whatever the result is and call it gold.
If we call it gold and label it gold and treat it as gold, it's gold, right?
And this kind of magical thinking is a way that a lot of people get through the day, you know, and at the end of a day, they believe whatever it is they want to believe, even though it's provably false. That's magic.
Mm-hmm.
And evidence is not required. And I think a lot of cultures selectively choose to interpret their experience of reality that way. And we all do to some degree, more or less.
Right. Okay. So, but in the cultural world, the world of cultures, what roles might this play as we go along? I mean, historically, we know that magic has been looked at as being potentially the religion of the time.
I remember my grandmother used to believe in the Kanahura. which was this Eastern European Jewish thing, which was like the evil eye.
Mm.
And that somebody cast, the baby got sick because somebody cast an evil eye on that baby, mm-hmm. because okay. they had some reason to do so, right?
So a curse of some kind.
Right, right. And so you had to do something to counteract the Kanahura.
Right, okay.
You spit three yeah. times on the ground, and the evil eye will be protected.
Now, did you have to spit through your fingers or anything like that? I know that's one thing that's done in some areas.
No, I don't know if she ever did that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't okay. remember.
I did you ever remember. See her spit?
Oh, yeah.
For this?
Oh, yeah, she would do that, and she would speak very seriously about this.
Okay.
And yeah. I know, and there are versions of this, you know, in so many cultures. In Latin culture, mm-hmm. there is a form of a casting of an evil eye.
Okay.
In many Mediterranean cultures, there are. Certainly in the Levantine cultures and in the Arab world. Not so much in modern Arab, because that's been dominated by Islam. But even pre-Islamic traditions go and include this idea of an evil eye that needs to be cast out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then this whole concept of magic then permeates these beliefs, the belief system, right?
Especially if the culture is an old one. I mean, yeah. the older a culture, the more pre-scientific the base of a culture, the more these kinds of issues will definitely be part of daily tradition. Whether people even believe it in or not, it's the tradition. You know, people walk around with amulets.
Yeah.
And they may not even know that they're amulets. They may not even know that they come out of these pre-scientific traditions of magical thinking. But the North African hand, it's a five-fingered hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen people wearing that around their necks.
Mm-hmm.
That's been become part of the Jewish tradition of North Africans, North mm-hmm. African mm-hmm. Jews. But It comes out of an ancient magical way of thinking and a magical way of protecting oneself from evil curses.
And a lot of, like, good luck charms.
And what is a good luck charm but a magical right. way of thinking? Yeah,
right. And people might carry those for a variety of reasons. I mean, and they can do it. They might have a good luck penny or some other coin.
And what was the poor, unfortunate rabbit? Where did that come from?
A rabbit's foot. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, hey, Torin. How are you?
Oh, hello.
Good. Here's Dean. Here's Tom. And we didn't. Oh,
no, Torin's with us. Yes.
Are you going to forgive us? Are you going to forgive us? You're over there in the corner. We didn't even see you.
We're just
now
ignoring you.
Oh.
I don't have a blanket on me today, thankfully.
That's good. No, you were healthy the last episode, so
yeah.
We expected you to be healthy again. And in fact, I'm hoping you do have a good luck charm on you so that you can now stay perfectly healthy.
And is there some performance we can do? What kind of magical penance can we do to redeem ourselves from the almost irredeemable oversight of not having introduced you when we so selfishly introduced ourselves?
That was long and wow. boring most of the time.
I felt like that was penance enough, right?
I think it was. I think moving
so.
On.
Just getting through that.
How about a Quidditch match? I would enjoy that.
But is fantastic. Just,
yeah. Now, isn't the idea of penance a form of magic?
Well, it could be.
You know, the whole concept. I mean, there is this fine line and between religious belief mm-hmm. and superstitious belief and belief in these things that cannot be scientifically or evidentially proven.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so certain religions say that if you go through this kind of ceremony, then this will be the result.
Yes.
And it will prove to be either beneficial or not. Right. Right?
However, we look back.
Is that magic?
There's a magical element to it, I think, because if we look back at cultures,
an element of magical thinking, right?
Right. If we look back to cultures historically, and especially ones going back, let's say ancient Rome or ancient Egypt, anything in those times, the Mayans, civilizations, and so forth, and we look at things that they did. We look at them worshiping multiple gods, gods that took part in trees and rocks or whatever it happened to be, and ceremonies that were, and sometimes, you know, bloody ceremonies that some did. And we look at those and we say, well this
sacrifice
was...
is a form of penance.
Right.
So
that's
there's
right.
often blood associated with sacrifice.
And we can look at it from a distance, from a time distance, and say, Well, it was sort of magic at that time. They were just, you know, it was. But in the time period.
Well, it's easier for us to say that if we don't have this, if we no longer share that belief.
What I'm saying is in the time period, they're not looking at it like that. I mean, maybe someone is, but most of them aren't. Right? Am I wrong?
That's right. And if it's validated by authority,
yeah,
which is what authority does, because authority needs religion to get on with its agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's validated by authority, it's really hard for an individual to step back and say, this is not so.
Right. What you're saying is nonsense. There's no proof for this. Is a way to end up being the human sacrifice.
That's right. If you start to call it out as fiction,
yeah,
you're in big trouble.
Right, right. And so in many ways that we might look at as being magical, I mean, in the medical world, when we look at medicine, I mean, certainly we can use the term, what doctors sometimes do is pure magic. But in reality, it's not.
If we use the term, I'm sorry to interrupt, but...
Did you mean to interrupt right then?
Of course I meant to
interrupt. Of course you did.
But I'm still sorry about it.
Oh, well, thank you.
In one of the ways that we talked about, right there. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
So I meant to interrupt even though I said I didn't.
Right.
And I'm and sorry
really
about
sorry.
It even though I'm not.
No, you're not.
But moving on from that.
Yes, moving on.
What was I going to say?
I have no clue what you were going to say. We're talking medical magic. And,
oh, well, yeah. When somebody does something that's amazing,
yes.
We often use the word magical.
We do.
You know, because it's so unpredictable and we can't fathom it because we're not the scientist or the priest who did it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's the province of these people with special skills and talents.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it magical.
Well,
so
I don't know if it's the problem with them. It's a problem of us, the way we're treating them. We should not treat any of them as being magical. They're skilled. They're skilled at what they do.
Well, then the pickpocket who magically distracts you, or the magician who distracts you from the fact that he's picking your pocket,
mm-hmm.
is kind of a skilled magician. Right?
Absolutely he is. And there are magicians out there who get very upset when other magicians try to pass it off as being complete magic, not the idea of distraction and things along those lines, trickery.
Trickery.
Which is what it is.
Isn't there a law that says that if you learn, if a magician tells you the magic, the trick, that you could be arrested for that? It's in the Constitution. It's in the Bill of Rights.
I'm sure it is.
That if you are told something by a magician,
well,
if you're told the secret and you tell the secret,
yeah,
done.
Yeah, that's it. Done. Wow. That's harsh.
Finished.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, stay away from Las Vegas. I think every third person's a magician in Las Vegas, I'm pretty sure.
It's the 28th. Is it the 20th? Can you look that up, Torin?
The 28th?
Yeah, no, I just did. It's the 28th, yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that.
And circling back to I also wanted to know about the source of the rabbit's foot. Is there a way we can find that out?
I'm curious about that too. I will.
Is there a magical machine that might help you learn?
Is there a magical machine?
See, now there we go. Let's think about it. The internet. If you were born in 1919, okay, today is it's 2019, right?
It's just 2 years before me.
So if you were born, you have no idea how accurate that is. if you were born in 1919, and you somehow we're in a coma or something, and then we woke you up, and you were then told you were 100 years old, which would be very depressing at that point. But and then you woke up, and suddenly here's the internet, here's wireless. Isn't that going to come off to you as magic?
I mean, yes, of course.
Learn why it isn't.
It's the old trope parlor game where if you could take one thing with you and go back 200 years to your predecessors, what would that one thing from today be?
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't that look magical?
Absolutely.
If whatever it was, right? What would you do? What would you bring back with you if you could?
That's a really good question.
If you could get a time machine.
In order to
get into a time machine and go back 200 years to
your predecessors. I would bring my computer back with me.
Your laptop?
Yes. because it doesn't need to be connected to the internet. That would be something I couldn't bring with me, but I can bring the computer and hope that I could figure out a way to charge it occasionally.
Yeah, I wouldn't bring the computer because there's no internet and there's no electricity.
Yeah, but the internet doesn't make the computer. The computer can do amazing things without the internet. And to someone 200 years ago, they would be blown away by
But there's
by the
no
idea
electricity.
Well, you got to sparingly use your battery. Maybe a solar charger. I bring that with me so I could... Because whatever you bring that's electronic, you're going to run out of electricity. That's 200 years ago, you're saying? So we're back in the 1800s, the early 1800s. Yeah, there's... Other than Ben Franklin running around with a key and a kite, we've got no electricity at that point.
I think I would bring a Band-Aid.
Okay.
Or...
In case you cut yourself along the way, which is smart, but... I'm not so sure I'm amazed. It's the early 1800s. They bandaged people.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You know, the edges of this time machine.
Velcro would be interesting.
Velcro would be interesting, right?
Yeah.
Or a little antibiotic cream.
Yeah, but would they understand the antibiotic cream?
Sure, because back then everybody was dying from thorn cuts and things.
That's a long-term magic trick. But yeah, you're right. You put it on someone and then they heal up. They'd think, oh, this is a magic potion, right? The term magic potion.
Right, magic potion.
Someone comes up with something, whether it was from leaves or whatever.
Torin, what would you take back with you?
I'm sorry, I'm looking up rabbits.
He's over there in his own world.
He doesn't have that magic machine.
No.
Yeah. He's really looking
his magic
it
machine
up,
is not quote, working unquote, right now because it's some days it not so magical.
I'm immersed in this because it's interesting. From what I'm seeing, and this is, you know, it's Wikipedia, so
we're on the rabbit's foot now.
Yeah, ahead with a grain of salt here, but appears to have It says, may have originated from a system of folk magic known as hoodoo, which came out of West Africa.
Yeah, right.
And the belief was that the rabbit's foot... So rabbit is an animal into which shape-shifting witches could transform themselves.
Okay.
So hence from that, it was believed if you took off a piece that it could be good luck, and you would wear it around your neck.
Well, The basis of cannibalism in many cannibalistic tribes around the world is to eat something of the body of the person that you capture.
Right.
And then you're bringing that quality or that aspect of that person.
Strength
into you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So oftentimes if you were served up as dinner in these cultures, it was an honor.
Sure. I'm not sure where I could go with all of that. I'm going to get in trouble, I'm pretty sure.
I'm sorry, Dean. What was your question before,
my question was, what would you take from today if you were magically transported back in the time machine, which is also magical, right?
Yes.
To your predecessors and could bring something from today to show them?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, the smartphone jumps to mind. I don't know if you've already mentioned that,
the difficulty would be you don't have the internet,
and you don't have the electricity,
And again, I mentioned a laptop computer because it's got its own memory, so it has stuff you can work with. But you also have to have a way to recharge it, or you can only do that for a short period of time.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Dean mentioned an antibiotic cream, so that you would have like a magic potion.
Mm. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And tacos.
Tacos is good. Yeah. I'm sure they didn't have tacos 200 years ago.
No.
They didn't have Taco Bell, so there you go.
I'm taking it back to my predecessors.
Okay.
Now, of course, if I were Latino and I were going back 200 years, you know, in Mexico, they had tacos. They
bring a bagel back.
Better tacos. But all my predecessors had were pierogies and bagels.
There you go.
They didn't know about tacos. If they knew about tacos, they never would have invented gefilte fish.
There you go.
We don't need this.
Which is a whole podcast in itself, gefilte fish. But
I also want to know, Tord,
real
quick, if you're looking things up in the magical machine that you have there, where does the source of the shamrock come from? The lucky, you know, the
The Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms.
And it's because it's been transmuted in America into all these, from these Irish symbols. But
yes,
mainly Irish and Celtic is where their source.
While listening to this, you may think, hey, you know, I wonder, well, if you have a question like that and want to ask us, there's a couple ways you can do it. One would be through email, which is oopsculturshow@gmail.com. That's oopsculturshow@gmail.com. And then there's also our handle on Twitter, which is oopsculturshow. That's oopsculturshow. I know, it's not original, but it works. Okay. Torin, have you come up with anything on Shamrock's force?
The Celtic symbols.
I have.
Okay,
yes,
what do you got?
From the authority of finegardening.com.
Ah, so, I always go by them. I never start the day without looking at their
stuff. A true magician.
Yes. Oh.
This is not an advertisement for finegardening.com.
Okay.
We're not being paid by them.
Unless they're going to pay us, but okay.
So, of course, yeah, exactly. Then it'll happily be an ad for them. I actually looked up Knock on Wood, too, so I'll get to both of those. So what they say is, according to legend, the shamrock was a sacred plant to the druids of Ireland because its leaves formed a triad, and three was a mystical number in the Celtic region.
Of course. Three is mystical everywhere.
Yeah, the three is, whenever you tell a joke, you always tell one thing, the second thing, and the third thing is your bang. Yeah, it's your punchline.
And you know where the source of the magic of three comes from?
No, I don't.
It's the source of patriarchy.
Okay. You're not going to give me any more than that? That's it? We're done?
It's the physical aspect of a male that distinguishes them from a female.
Ah, you're talking about the boys.
The fleur-de-lis.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Well, I suppose there's a whole lot of themes in and around all
the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Well, I know, but that's down the road a ways. The trilogy,
or up
the
ways.
The triad goes back. Neptune carried a triad.
Well, it just gets repeated.
Absolutely.
Every
there's nothing new. All of this stuff gets stolen from other stories that were told in the past. Just we don't remember them, or we didn't never heard them in the first place.
So the druids had the same worship of three, and therefore, if you had a three leaf clover, it was common, but a four leaf was uncommon.
Excuse my ignorance on all of this, but is the shamrock? And I have an Irish background, but it means nothing. The three, the shamrock, and the four leaf clover. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, we'll go with that for now until you tell us differently. So the four leaf clover then is just four leaf clover, and so it's considered good luck. Did you find out why?
No, I don't know.
Okay, great. Thanks for your help.
We didn't ask him that.
Why the hell is he here? No. Do we have any idea?
Why even assume that he would want to go there?
Did not provide that.
How about knocking on wood, which I'm about to do here in a minute with my head.
Yeah, I did look that up. You know, this is what I think about a lot, because it comes out of my mouth quite a bit,
yeah,
and the mouths of those around me quite a bit.
I don't know if we want to talk about what comes out of your mouth quite a bit.
We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
And yet, you know, why do we say this, right?
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia, so, you know, grain of salt. But, you know, what they say is, obviously, this is something we say in the U.S. quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It also is said in Britain. It's said in Australia. It's said in New Zealand.
Oh, so there's an Anglo-Saxon.
South Africa.
Anglo-Saxon root.
So we're going to take it out of the U.K. area there. That
Anglo-Saxon or Celtic, perhaps.
So according to this article, the origin of the custom may be, so obviously there's some uncertainty, but maybe in German folklore, where supernatural beings were thought to live in trees and can be invoked for protection. Mm-hmm. So you got to knock on the wood and get them to come out and help you.
Wake up!
So it's sort of like warding off the evil eye. Right?
Sure,
it's
that makes perfect sense.
Asking for protection, then.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
if you believe that there are spirits in the wood, mm-hmm. with a tree or whatever, then you say, "Wake up! I need your help." I guess mm-hmm. is what it is.
Right.
Okay, and that's going back a ways into German lore. Then for those types of things,
there's something interesting. Yeah. You know, I think we can connect to this really very profoundly. If you walk up to a tree
mm-hmm.
and knock on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
In that experience, you do. There is something very human about calling out a spirit from inside the tree.
Okay. Have you been doing this recently?
I do this all the time.
Do you? I think it's time to call someone, right?
Yeah.
As soon as possible.
I'll get on this.
Okay, thank you. I've got him trapped in here right now. So
see, you that's, go get a, that's the perfect response by people who don't believe.
Absolutely it is.
The non-believers.
Then
and
you're insane.
The authority will try to lock
you. Or you're
you
a witch
up.
And we drown you. But if as we keep talking about this, I'm realizing that the idea of magic, I mean, the appeal of it is huge because I believe it's the foundation of all these religions that we can look at much less controversially, the ones that have already kind of gone away. Like
yeah, because you can't start to say these things about the things
well,
that
we
people
can,
currently
however.
Believe, because then you're asking people to
we may get to
suspend
their actual belief system.
Yeah, and that's a very uncomfortable place to be.
Very uncomfortable. And it's always been there, regardless. As far as we know, in every kind of culture, in every kind of group of people of any size, there's been some form of this.
Right.
That they have people have gone to.
Okay, here's the thing. Magical
Wait,
thinking.
Wait, hold on. This is the thing, Torin. Get a pencil out and write this down.
Okay, I'll note it.
Magical
okay.
thinking is magical thinking is magical thinking, whether it's applied
That's
to
brilliant.
Religion or to superstition or to
right.
or to turning you know a piece of wood into gold. But here's the thing.
Oh no, it's another thing.
Oh, thing I gotta make two. Another note. Okay.
Thing two, yes.
Anybody can believe, because it's all about faith. It's about faith and what you choose to believe.
Right,
and
right.
that cannot
right.
be challenged. If you right. say, I believe there are fairies in the bottom of the garden,
mm-hmm.
if you believe that, okay, I can't challenge that.
That's
I can say, I have no evidence to that.
Yes, and I do
say,
not believe
and,
that.
And I can say scientifically that they don't live in the bottom of the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I can choose not to believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you choose to believe in it, even in the face of scientific evidence that they don't exist there, I can't challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Therefore, is it a superstition that the fairies live on the bottom of the garden? Or is it a religion? But that you're believing that the fairies live on the bottom of the garden. The only way it becomes a religion is when authority steps in mm. and says, yes, there are fairies at the bottom of the garden. And then...
And here's the structure we're working in.
And then you got 100 people or 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people saying there are fairies at the bottom of the garden.
Theologians would probably... they may debate that. I don't know. But I would say that... That they, yes, I mean, that's the essence of who they are.
If you look at human history, you know, you begin to catalog the amount of fiction that mm-hmm. has been authorized as fact by authority. You know, so you
Absolutely.
Had Roman gods, you had Greek gods, you had Hittite gods, you mm-hmm. had Judeo gods, you had Egyptian gods,
you had
Chinese
the Mayan
gods,
you had the Aztec gods.
The list goes
gods.
On
you,
and on.
You,
and
all, forever.
And everybody in that group
uh-huh.
believed it, and believed it as fact, because the authorities
That's right.
made it very dangerous for you to choose not to.
Well, we also knew things like the sun was eaten by a large monster
right.
each evening, and then it was reborn again in the morning. And that was a fact. That was what was going on. And there it was.
Yeah.
It happened to be over those hills and, right over there.
And
every
it's
time.
And it's rising on the back of a turtle.
Or exactly. Or we're on the back of a turtle. Or who knows? And I believe the turtle thing. By the way, I think the Earth is a flat plane on the back of a turtle. I have not seen anything to dispute that. I've only seen two-dimensional pictures of the planet. So there you go.
In fact, here's the thing. Between
thing three,
with
three.
Between you and me,
yeah,
it is the turtle.
It's the turtle. I knew
it's
it.
The turtle.
I knew it.
Which is why,
hey, have you seen a three-dimensional picture of the Earth?
It's one of no.
No, nor have I.
No.
No. No one has.
Right.
So if you pose a situation where we don't have the scientific knowledge or equipment to actually prove or
right.
supply the evidence,
right.
then you can default. To belief.
You absolutely can't. I mean, other than the fact that the bottom of the ship disappears before the masts do, which is absolutely not what would happen under those circumstances. But other than that, we have no proof whatsoever of it being anything but a flat, flat Earth. The I'm sure I've offended someone out there with my anti-flat Earth opinion, but there you go. Deal with it. I'm going to go back to Harry Potter here for a minute, because Harry Potter was a phenomenon. The whole concept, the books,
well,
the movies,
magic,
everything.
Magic in medieval England was a very powerful force.
It's a powerful force today. I mean, to this day, from the beginning of the first release of the first book.
Well, it became, yes, it's fabulous.
And that's what I'm saying.
And the word fabulous itself,
yeah,
it implies magical.
Does it?
Well, to be a fabulous is somebody who tells stories that have no basis. To be, the word...
Sort of like our podcast.
Yes, absolutely. The word itself.
We should have called it fabulous.
Something that's fabulous, even used in our vernacular. Uh-huh. You know, it's fabulous. It's like beyond belief. It's beyond knowledge, but it's also beyond belief.
Yeah.
It's
and yet
it's
I want
fabulous,
to believe it.
But,
because it's kind of fun and interesting.
Well, it's liberating to try to think that there may be another way of seeing things that makes the world a nicer place to live in.
Right. So where I was going before, once again, I was so rudely interrupted.
Who did that?
I don't know, but they really have to stop. The idea of the Harry Potter thing, what I'm going with, is that in so many cultures, this thing has been turned into so many languages around the globe, and it is incredibly appealing throughout the planet, really. Most of the planet is familiar with this whole idea. So that it appears that it is a cross-cultural appeal toward magic. And I mean, they refer to it as magic. That's in the book. J.K. Rowling refers to this as magic. And so we see it that way. And so it's which is brilliant on her part. Because everyone can deal with that under those concepts. We can deal with it on whatever level we want to, like that. But we have, I think, as cultures and throughout history and continuing today. I mean, people believe that certain animals will bring them benefits. People believe that, is it magic to feng shui? Is that magic?
Yeah, is it magic? I mean, if we have no scientific evidence.
Right.
Or if we're lacking in scientific evidence and believe that in the future we will not have any to prove it, then at this point in time, if you believe it, it's magic.
And that's a very strong cultural influence right there in that type of thing.
Absolutely.
We've talked about that in past podcasts about where things are placed. If you go into a Chinese restaurant or you go into a Korean restaurant or a Japanese restaurant, you will see things placed in different ways and for different reasons, but they have a belief system to them.
I know the kind of food that I'm going to get if I walk into a Chinese restaurant just by looking at the placement of the objects, you know, whether it's going to be Sichuanese or whether it's going to be Hunanese or Cantonese. Cantonese is from the south of China, where feng shui plays a large role in life. And so what you've got is lots of Hong Kong restaurants in the south of China, you know, so you'll see this kind of food there. Well, if there's a water element up front, like a tank of fish,
right.
you know, you can order the fish, you can choose your fish and they'll take it out of a tank. But the water is a feng shui element, which is bringing good luck into the restaurant. And there'll be a mirrored wall in the back because that reflects the bad forces out of the restaurant. So if I walk past the restaurant and I see a mirrored wall in the back and fish tanks up front, I know the kind of food I'm going to get.
Right.
Yeah. That's an element of feng shui.
Yes.
Absolutely. Right.
And but you can recognize it because you recognize the culture that's dictating that portion of the feng shui. And you can recognize that within the scope of things. I'm saying, okay, see, that's a rational approach to it, as opposed to the belief system that there is going to be a drawing of good luck or a bouncing out of bad things that might happen to you.
That's superstitious, right? That, you know, well, lucky and
maybe
unlucky.
It is, but I am a strong believer of the idea of, as you know, of the idea of energy, and that's something we can prove. Energy is there, and it has no beginning and no end, and which reflects an awful lot of things that have come up in religions throughout the history of humans. But beyond that, in that energy, we don't really know much. We don't know exactly how energy behaves in many different ways. Can a human through different sources and through using materials or water or mirrors or rocks or stones or plants or other creatures or whatever, can you impact the energy and in fact have these results? Maybe. That's as much as I think we can say about it. I don't care who it is.
And the fact that we can't say more may be due to the fact that there isn't any more to say. So therefore, it's just belief. It's not scientifically
evidence.
It may
just be belief.
Or
but again,
it may be that we don't have enough science yet to show it.
And do the cultures show us then that if you have the strong enough belief, then in fact there is a direct impact by these types of things.
Well, that's kind of like the placebo effect, you know, that if you
right,
truly
which may
believe
or may not be a real effect, although
which becomes a scientific fact.
Right.
That's
so if
right.
a person is given a sugar pill instead of given penicillin or whatever else it is, although I don't think I'd go there with penicillin, it's a little dangerous. But if they're given something instead of what we would normally consider pharmaceuticals, And they still come up with the result that is there, which happens. I mean, doctors, scientists.
That's why they call
it
the placebo effect.
It's the placebo effect. But another person can take the sugar pill and not be impacted at all by it. It will not positively or negatively impact them because it turns out it's the sugar pill.
And the believer will say that's
although
because
the sugar probably is bad for you. But that's
and the believer will say that's because they didn't believe hard enough.
You didn't, right? That's right.
And the non-believer will say, no, that's because it really didn't have any scientific effect.
And no effect. And who's right? Depending on your culture, right?
Depending on your culture and whether you want to believe that that's the case.
Now, wouldn't you want to believe, and this goes to, I think, or I was going to say I believe, but I think that it's like Harry Potter. Harry Potter, the nice thing about that was it gave solutions. It's almost like the and I was a big time superhero comic fan when I was a kid. I bought them all the time.
Well,
Superman,
the
Batman, Aquaman,
the whole
Flash.
Superhero thing is all about magical powers.
Right.
Right?
Right. So this is within cultures. Yes. It's again throughout the world. This is part
I mean
of
if you if you believe in that,
mm-hmm.
That
you want to believe in
that Superman, you know, could see through. Well, this is part of its appeal because people want solutions.
And
they
that's where I think this is taking us.
And therefore, that need can be manipulated by power elites who claim to be the authorities and the holders of the keys. And you know, the whole notion of trying to establish what is sane and not sane is really about what is allowable by the authorities and what is not.
Yes. Right. Who has the power to be able to say that? They're the ones who dictate it, or they're protecting themselves from what they perceive as a threat.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
to
that's
their
how
authority.
They can use that. Right. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting one.
The Wizard of Oz,
works.
I think, was a marvelous metaphor for that. But when Dorothy pulls the curtain back.
Yes.
And she sees what the authority was really about.
Pay no attention to the man
behind the curtain.
There is, yes.
Pay no attention to the man behind the iconostasis. Pay no attention to the man behind the bima. Pay no attention to the man behind, yes.
Whatever it happens to be along those lines. Absolutely.
Fill in the blank.
Yeah, that's very, but the Wizard of Oz story, by the way, is quite a deep story if you really, really look into it. Not to get off onto that, but there's a lot of symbolism, a significant symbolism in that story.
A remarkable amount, and there's a very, very profound connection between the Ramayana and the Wizard of Oz and the story of flying monkeys. And that exists in the and Ramayana, by the way, is one of the great Hindu myths.
And that also goes to the idea that there really isn't anything new anymore. And there hasn't been in quite some time. That as we said before, Shakespeare really didn't create any of his plots.
Or that who's the author, Frank of the Wizard of Oz?
Frank L. Baum.
Yeah, just took a really good story that millions and millions of people had been believing in for millennia, and said, "Well, if it's good enough for them, let's transmute it for the West.
Sure. Whether that was done consciously or subconsciously, it doesn't really matter.
We don't know.
But that's what
happens
today.
There are a lot of elements to it that would be almost plagiaristic if it occurred today, I think.
Well, possibly if we care enough about the other version of it.
Yes, that's right.
If we don't, then we don't care.
If enough people even knew about it, then
right, which in the English speaking world, we probably did not.
Right,
most likely.
So check out the Ramayana, folks.
Yeah,
if you don't know
it, I read it in college, and it made me think of Star Wars.
Mm,
you know, it's that
interesting.
That mythic structure.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Star Wars is nothing new in Star Wars either. I hate
no,
to tell
that.
It's
that mythic structure.
Right. Sure. That's right. Sure. All of those types of things are. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Obviously it works.
Why not build on
time.
Really fine structure? Yeah.
Yeah.
Build on a good foundation.
Enjoy it.
Well,
sure.
That's always the problem. You know, when something is that good, you get people, let's use it again somehow, which is fine as long as you don't.
Well, you've got to bring your own message to it, or your own twist to it. Yep.
It's the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell, and you just adapt. Yeah.
Right. That's right. Well, all right then. Okay, listen. The way to get hold of us is oopscultureshow@gmail.com. And our Twitter handle is oopscultureshow. Whether this is the first episode or the third episode or whatever episode that you've listened to, if you're still listening at this point, I think you might like this. And if you do, you should really subscribe. That's the best way to go, really, honestly. I know what I'm talking about. All right, so just subscribe through iTunes or through wherever you get your podcasts from. But do it today, okay? Subscribe. Thank you.
I never got the fortune telling thing.
Well, that's because they tell you things you don't want to hear.
No. They tell me no. They sometimes tell me things I don't want to hear. I remember one time I went on a fortune telling spree.
Did you?
I did.
Did you?
I went to four different fortune tellers.
I wouldn't believe anything he says from this point on.
In one day, we went from one fortune teller to another. And the thing about it is this. Why would I give my money? Why would I give my money to somebody who, if they knew the future for everybody else, why would they be doing this?
Right.
And why wouldn't they just do it for themselves?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just go to the stock market and make $1 billion and move on.
Well, it's like this. That's the same
Instead
thing.
Instead of you have this crummy little storefront.
Right. It's the same reason why I don't want to give my money, the little that I have, to a stockbroker. Because if you knew how to invest my money, then you don't need my money.
Right.
You shouldn't need
just
my money.
Just go invest the money you have and live happily ever after.
Exactly. Right. Now, I know there are lots of other reasons why I need a financial analyst. Of course, I need an analyst.
Yeah, see, you're believing in the magic.
Right.
Though,
I need an analyst in a lot of areas.
Right.
But nevertheless, you know, why would I need a fortune teller? Why would I believe with a fortune teller?
Well, but it goes to so many other areas, too. The groundhog in the U.S.,
But here's my point.
Here's the point. Hold on.
Hold your groundhog idea.
Okay,
hold your groundhog idea.
Yes, I've got my groundhog. He's got no idea. He's got no idea at all. Nothing. Why am I not surprised? I'm not surprised.
That's something to do with the fortune teller.
Yeah.
You had to go to the groundhog, and then it flew out of my head.
Throw it on me. That's why I'm here. Okay.
Oh, wow.
I'll just take my blame and move along.
Oh, is it time for magical penance on my part now?
I think it is. I think it might be, yes. I think you should feel very sorry for me right now. What I was going to say, let me go to my groundhog and you can sit over there and try to get it back. Magically remember what you have forgotten. the groundhog is this silly, silly superstition that came about who knows why, which I think it's simply meaning we took an animal, and this is in the U.S. I do not know if they do it anywhere else in the world. Hopefully, they probably do their own versions, but it's an incredibly stupid superstition. I'm sure the people in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, will be very upset about me saying this.
Yes,
but it's,
hopefully they're not
but
listening.
It's stupid.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Punxsutawney. I'm
Are
sure
we
you're
really
all lovely
sorry?
People. No, I'm not sorry at all.
Okay.
So if this large woolly furry rat.
It's not that large,
thing.
Right?
Well, it's bigger than a regular rat, except some of them in New York. but most of them. And if when that comes out of its burrow, its den that they keep it in, and it comes out, if it sees its shadow, it goes back in, and there's 6 more weeks of winter.
Supposedly.
Well, no. In there are 6 more weeks of winter.
But that's, it'll be a rough winter or a mild winter.
Right. It's either going to, you're going to get over and have a little bit, what we would refer to as maybe an early spring. Obviously, this is only important to people living in climates that are seasonal, specifically seasonal. So that's the idea.
And if he doesn't see his
shadow or she doesn't see her shadow.
Is it a he or a she?
I don't know. Punxsutawney Phil, I'm assuming, but it could be sure for Phyllis. But
or Felicia.
Mm-hmm. What was yours?
Felicia.
Or Felicia, okay. But I don't believe it is a male. And we'll use they and move on from there. If they see their shadow, and then 6 more weeks. If they do not, well, then spring is right around the corner. Now, over the years, this has been shown to be utter nonsense. And it really isn't a safe prediction. Not to mention that like every little area now has some critter who is doing the same thing all on February 2nd, which is known as Groundhog Day. And that's when we bring them out. So is it going to be right? Well, it's a 50-50 chance. You could flip a coin and get that. But they know there is a scientific aspect to it because if I'm running a ski hill, mountain, I probably would like 6 more weeks of winter. If I am looking forward to warmer weather and getting outside more and so on and so forth, I don't want it. So to some group, Punxsutawney is going to give an answer that they are not pleased with or they're very pleased with. And those who are very pleased with at the time when they're very pleased with it, why not buy into it? It's telling me what I want to hear.
Well, especially when authorities
are
give it their blessing.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, the media covers this thing when they take the rat out of the hole.
But they cover it for one simple reason. People are paying attention.
It.
If you don't pay attention, the media doesn't cover it.
And that's the point. They believe it.
And the thing about in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, it is a moneymaker for them. As, you know, the Loch Ness Monster is for the Loch Ness area of Scotland.
Now, well, now that's another, you know, any kind of myth-making thing, you know.
Right.
There's a magical element to myth.
Yes, absolutely. Right? The Yeti.
Myth is a magical story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story based on a magical, a fabulous creature.
A fabulous creature that may have threads of reality and truth to it.
Or the gods, which is why the gods always looked human.
Mm-hmm.
When they were depicted, so that the listener to the story could relate to the myth.
Sure.
Right. I mean, if you make the gods featureless or looking like something else, if you made them look like a different creature other than humans and they had different attributes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a lot of the Greek gods would be the satyrs would be half human and half
horse
is it? Yeah. Right. And that would give them certain attributes. And back to your point about the magic of charms and animals having certain characteristics and animals being able to. So the wise fox.
Yes.
The
wise owl.
The wise owl.
The sly fox.
Sly fox.
Right.
Right. The
giving them human characteristics.
Right.
And you have the not to slander their beliefs in this part of the system, but the cows in India. And the relevance that they have to the greater mix, and all of these things intertwine, whether they are based on more of reality or stronger beliefs. I don't know that it's going to be dictated by the time element, and it's like if you asked me before, what would I bring back? If I'm going back far enough, I would bring back a microscope and slides. So that I could show people the world that they cannot see with their eyes.
And when they first did that, when Leeuwenhoek did that,
yes,
you know, people didn't believe it.
Of course not.
They jumped back in horror at what they were seeing on the slide.
Mm-hmm. I still do, but that's a different story.
Do you know what those little things on your eyelashes look like?
Well, that's
they look like little rhinoceros. You know that? And this is not belief.
If you scraped your eyelash right now
and put it under a microscope, you'd have like these little rhinoceroses.
Really?
Yes.
Rhinoceri. Is it rhinoceri? Rhinoceroses? What is it? I don't know.
Did I say rhinoceroses?
Grammar time.
Yes.
Grammar time.
Grammar time.
Everybody loves grammar time. Grammar time.
Rhinoceri.
Well, listen. Obviously, we've got a long way to go with this. But oh, wait.
Rhinoceri.
Ding.
Uh-huh. Oh, licensing.
Licensing, yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay. When we had grammar time and licensing in one swoop there. It was big stuff.
When are we going to have grandpa time?
Speaking of...
Oh, right. We forgot about that.
Yeah, well, we will do that. We've got an upcoming podcast, actually. We're going to do grandpa time.
That's good.
About elders and younger.
Oh, that's right.
And youngers, too.
Well, youngers. Age and how different cultures view age and
that's
aging.
That's coming yes. up. As well as you're going to tell us about New Zealand and your trip there, because...
An absolutely fascinating culture, and the Maori beliefs, and again, here are Maori beliefs, and one could view it as superstitious, or one could view it as cultural, one could view it as religious, but they're magical, because many of them have no scientific evidence to support them.
Right, and yet, even just the microscope itself, things that could have been happening that people said, well, that can't be real, the microscope may have said, but it is real.
It is real, right.
It may have, and they did not have that before. So now, all of a sudden, you've got this tool that opens up an entire galaxy, universe, that we didn't realize was right there around us. And science was saying, no, there's nothing there. And then until you could see it.
To provide the evidence.
Right. And then they're all over it. And that's great. That's what science does. But it's one of those kinds of things where you cannot necessarily just say, well, that's just superstition.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines, because it might not be.
But if you do the argument in reverse, it becomes difficult because what happened was everybody there before the microscope was invented could not see this other world.
No.
Therefore, you couldn't make a case for its existence, which is why Pasteur had such a hard problem with that.
Right.
He thought that it was microscopic germs that were causing the illnesses.
Yes.
But he couldn't prove it. So people said, if I can't see it, if I don't have the evidence, then you're asking me to believe something I cannot see, therefore I can't do that. Except when people want to.
Except when it's a good thing for them.
You know, right.
If it's penicillin, that's a good thing.
No, but then they'll believe in, you know, all sorts of amazing, fabulous stories that have absolutely no basis whatsoever, but that are given by authority. And then the response to that is, even though I can't be proven, I believe it anyway.
Well, yes.
So, and it works in both directions.
But I'll give you another area, too, another aspect of that. And then I have a fortune to tell here. But that would be in when you start talking about UFOs and creatures from another world or outer space. And in the United States, there's a place called Area 51, which is supposedly hiding people from other or creatures from other galaxies, other planets who have come to Earth and they've been captured or crashed there or whatever. And they have there. And that is to this day. Now, the fun
thing
about
that is New York City.
The authority.
It's where everything in the world is.
Well, yes, true. Right.
That's Area 51.
That's Area 51. But the funny thing about that is that people keep responding to that, and it grows and grows and grows and grows in power. To this day, the internet is talking about getting millions of people and rushing the place now. Currently, at the time we were recording this, they're talking about doing that. And they're saying, oh, you know, that you can't do that. But if you do, we'll probably kill you. So there's the authority figures kind of verifying things in a negative way. And as opposed to the going, this you must believe, they're going, no, no, you shouldn't believe. And the belief is so strong or wants to be so strong that it actually takes it and runs with it and makes it even bigger.
Yeah. Yes, I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated with the fact that people will choose to believe something that they have no evidence for and then disbelieve things that there is plenty of evidence for.
Right.
Which only goes to show that the choice that's being made of what you actually want to believe in is based on not fact and not belief, but rather on fear and desire.
And selfishness.
Well, fear and desire
come out of that.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Which can be reinforced by the authorities.
Absolutely. Or denied, which makes our interest peaked even more. The thing I'm going to now predict for us here.
Oh, this
I'm going
is to tell your, the future that
yes.
you're looking into.
Yes.
The crystal ball.
That's
yeah.
Right.
That's the other thing. A crystal ball.
Yeah. That's, they're kind of cool looking.
That's
that
a
may
charm
just simply
thing,
be what that
it?
Is about.
Crystal and who had control the magical forces? Because I couldn't do with a crystal ball what the fortune teller does. With
oh my
a crystal
gosh! You
ball.
Know where we're going here. The orbs come become very big players in different parts of the world too.
The orbs. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going to see into the future right now.
What is your future?
The future is that we're done with this podcast today. So yeah. Ooh.
Whoa.
Do you believe
amazing.
In magic?
Oh, here we go again. Ding. Licensing? Yes. I know. I told him already. But okay. All right. Torin, I'm going to say thank you for your efforts today and your rabbit's foot, and I hope you have good luck throughout the day.
Well, thank you very much.
And,
you're welcome. To you as well.
And,
thank
and,
you.
And let me spit on the ground three times. To get rid of any kind of horror you might be walking
I'm
around
I'm also
with.
Knocking on wood while we do
it. Are you knocking on wood?
Yeah, I'm knocking on wood here. Okay. So anyway, that's magic for today. And magically, I am correct with my prediction. And this is the end of this particular podcast. And I'm Tom Peterson.
And I'm Dean Foster.
And you know what, everyone?
Oops! Your culture's showing.
Smell ya. Just want to bother you one last time to say we're a brand new podcast here at Oops, Your Culture's Showing, and we could really use your help by subscribing to the podcast. And not to mention that if you hung around this long and you liked what you heard, well, this makes it just easier for you to get the podcast. They'll pop up for you whenever they're released, so you can listen to them on your phone or your computer or however you listen to them. And it's easy to get, too. Just subscribe using iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really isn't hard, and we could really use your support. So, from all of us here at Oops, Your Culture's Showing,